Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. The pre-med year, session number 279. Hello and welcome to the three-time Academy Award-nominated podcast, The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I am your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to the Pre-Med Years podcast. I'm excited for you to be here this week. Before I jump in, if you're listening to this on March 28th, 29th, 30th, or 31st, and you are interested in working with me for your personal statements, your essays, your extracurriculars, if you want me to help you edit those, you can save 15% now. It's the first time I've ever had a sale on my services. You can save 15% using the code MAR2018, all capital letters, MAR2018. If you go to medicalschoolhq.net, click on the services and then personal statement and EC editing. This week, I have a great discussion with an emergency medicine physician here in the Colorado area, somebody who helps run the Wilderness Medicine Program at the University of Colorado. Now, you may remember I had Dr. Todd Miner on from the Wilderness Medicine Program earlier, back in episode 202, talking about the program. Now I have Dr. Elaine Reno on. Now, Dr. Elaine Reno is an emergency medicine physician. Dr. Todd Miner is not a physician. He's just one of those other kind of doctors. But Dr. Elaine Reno actually is the medical side of the Wilderness Medicine Program. And we talk about her journey into medicine, what she's learned. She's been on residency admissions committees, so we talk about some admissions stuff as well. And then we talk about wilderness medicine and what you should be doing as a student. And if you're in the Colorado area, I know there's a bunch of you that listen to this podcast in the area, they are looking to give scholarships to you, to students who are in the area. They try to preferentially give scholarships to Colorado students. So if you're in the area, reach out to the Wilderness Medicine Program at the University of Colorado. It's now run through the University of Colorado Boulder, the undergrad program, so you actually get credit for it. It's an elective credit for your university, possibly. So lots of fun stuff. We talk all about it in the podcast. So let's go and jump right in. Elaine, welcome to the Pre-Med Years. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on.
When did you realize that being a physician was what you wanted to do in your life?
So I finished my undergrad. I was working in a research lab, and I was sort of debating what I wanted to do next. And I was debating MD versus PhD. And part of my job in the research lab was to consent patients. We were doing this study where I would get primary tumor samples from the operating room, and I would go and I would consent patients to, you know, let us use their tumor samples and talk to them kind of about what we were going to do with them. And I just realized that my favorite part of my job was not sort of the day-to-day bench research or even the things we were learning from, you know, the research we were doing, but having those conversations with the families and getting to meet the patients and, you know, getting to sit with them pre-op when they were nervous and talk to them. And I felt like if my favorite part of my job is the human interaction, then the thing I should do is pursue medical school rather than getting a PhD.
How far removed from undergrad were you at that point?
So I was at least a year out. I did 2 years of basic science research before I went to medical school.
What do you think caused you to not realize you wanted to be a physician during undergrad or even before undergrad? What did you think you were going to do when you were in undergrad?
So that's a good question. When I was an undergrad, I think I really had no idea. I mean, so I went into undergrad. I'd taken a lot of advanced placement classes in high school, and so I had a bunch of credits going in. I started as an art major, and then I switched to molecular genetics, and I was still doing some of the art stuff, and I really had no idea, and I don't think I had any idea what I was going to do with my degree. I grew up in, you know, kind of a small town, and I didn't know a lot of doctors, and I didn't know anyone who'd ever gone to medical school, but, you know, the plan growing up was always like, you're going to go to college, and so I went to college, because that's what I was supposed to do, and then, you know, I think if I'd been more talented, I would have like pursued being a professional artist, but I was not remotely talented enough to do it. And so I just sort of got an undergrad degree and then was like, okay, now what? So.
You are an art major and you're like, ah, what's this molecular genetic? What is it? Molecular? What did you major?
Molecular genetics was my molecular final genetics. Undergrad major.
Yeah, how do you go from art to molecular genetics?
So I liked science. I always liked science, and I liked biology, and I liked art because it was creative, and I don't know, I just sort of took things that interested me in college, and that's what I landed on.
Yeah. Well, you leave college, you were never quote-unquote pre-med, and you finally figure it out at some point after all this clinical research, you're interacting with patients. What do you think it was about the patients that interested you in that? And why the thought of physician from just interacting with patients?
So I think that's a good question. So when I left undergrad, I didn't have any idea what I was going to do with myself. And so this is totally random, and for all the students listening, like, no matter how far you kind of get off whatever the traditional pre-med class is, like, you will not get as far off as I got, because what I did when I graduated was had no plan and no job, and my parents were like, you're done with school, you're an adult, you can support yourself, what are you going to do? And I was like, actually, I have no idea. And so my sister had just finished vet school, and she was moving to a town called Laughlin, Nevada, which is like, you know, on the river, like an hour outside of Las Vegas in the middle of nowhere. And she was like, well, if you come with me, I'll pay your rent. You can live with me for rent free if you help me drive my car and my stuff out to Laughlin, Nevada. So that was like the best offer. Yeah, the best offer I had at the time. And I was like, this is awesome. I'm moving to Laughlin, Nevada. So I got to Laughlin, Nevada. And it's like a casino town for retirees, and there's like nothing to do and no job. So after, like, you know, hanging out on my sister's couch in the middle of the desert in the summer, my sister was like, are you going to do anything? And I was like, probably not, actually. And she's like, that's not what I meant. My question was, what are you going to do? So she was like, you need to get a job. And I was like, okay, that's reasonable. So there were no jobs except cocktail waitressing. So I became a cocktail waitress in a casino in Laughlin, Nevada called the Riverside Casino. And I was like doing this job. And so first it's sort of where cocktail waitresses I feel like, go to die. Like, at some age, Vegas stops hiring you because you're too old. And I think that age is like about 30. And so everyone sort of retires in cocktail waitressing land to Laughlin, Nevada. So I was like, this is not a long-term job prospect for me. And so I was trying to figure out what I could do with my undergraduate degree. And I'd done undergraduate research as a summer job, and I liked it. So I was, my two criteria were like, one, I wanted to live somewhere where I could ski. And two, I wanted a job that didn't involve me wearing a corset and shiny tights to work. And so I was like looking online for jobs that fit those two criteria. And so I found a research job at the University of Colorado as what's called a professional research assistant. And so I applied for that, and then I flew out and I got the job, and that's kind of where I started.
Wow. From cocktail waitress to research assistant in Colorado. That is a journey. When you finally decided to make that switch and go, you know what? I think I want to be a doctor. What went through your mind at that point as far as trying to figure it all out?
I sort of like mulled over the decision for a year because I liked the research I was doing. I realized, to like progress in this, to have a career, to get my own grant funding, I was going to have to obtain some graduate level education. And there were PhDs working in the lab, and there were MDs working in the lab. And there were MDs who had clinical practices and had labs. And to me, that seemed like kind of the best of both worlds, because they could obtain grant funding, they could do research, but they also had these clinical practices, and they could go and take care of patients and help them. And so that sort of dichotomy of work started to appeal to me. And that's when I considered, okay, I think I'm going to apply to med school. And I was working full time. I couldn't like take a summer out to study for the MCAT. So I just bought the books and studied in the evening for like a year, and then took the MCAT.
How did that go?
It went fine.
Yeah.
So I'd been a chemistry TA, which I think helped. Ooh,
yeah, that definitely will help you. What was the hardest part about med school for you after being a cocktail waitress? I'm sure those skills probably weren't the most transferable. When you got to med school, what was that like for you?
So I think the hardest part of med school is, that's a good question. So for me, I felt like I had to always be studying. It was really hard for me to be like, I should take time to like spend time with my family, or, take time to exercise every day. And I think wellness is actually really important, and all those extra hours I put like memorizing things in the book probably did not improve my ability to practice as a physician. And I should have focused more on, wellness. And it just felt like any time I wasn't studying, I should be studying. And I struggle with that a lot in med school. And I also think med school is really isolating, because a lot of the first 2 years is really just classical textbook or lecture learning, which is, starting to improve and starting to change. But it's hard to see how this biochemistry you're memorizing is really going to be applicable to taking care of a patient one day. And, the background and the fundamentals are really important, but I think that the process is changing and evolving. But the process when I did it was much more the first 2 years are like, you go to lecture, you go to anatomy lab, you memorize the stuff, you take a test, you do it again, you do it again, you do it again.
Yeah, so this was pre-problem-based learning that Colorado has now.
Yeah, so I went to med school in Ohio.
Okay.
And I don't know if they were starting to do PBL, but it was still a very traditional curriculum.
Yeah, I think PBL is kind of taking over the country with schools adopting it. Whether or not students are okay with that, you kind of have to be.
I mean, that's much more, that's much more how medicine is practiced. Like, I don't sit in front of a textbook and memorize things. Like, the practice of medicine is much more problem-based learning than a lecture format, obviously.
Yeah. When you came out and decided to do emergency medicine, what was it that drew you to that after being a molecular geneticist? I mean, there's like genetics that you can go into. and other fields that may be more related to your undergrad. What was it about emergency medicine that you liked?
So I was one of those people who, during the third year rotations, I just liked everything. Like when I was on labor and delivery, I wanted to be, you know, an OB. When I was, you know, in some clinic, I wanted to do that. But when it sort of boiled down to it, people talk about the first decision you make is surgeon or not surgeon. And I thought I would love the operating room and really want to be a surgeon. But actually, I discovered I really don't like the operating room. And I'm the wrong person to be a surgeon. And I figured that out about myself really quick, mainly because we were in these like 12-hour cases and everyone else was like so enthralled and so excited. And I was like, you know, I have to pee. I'm ready for a snack. My feet are starting to hurt. And so I realized I should not be a surgeon. And so then I was looking at, do I like outpatient medicine? Do I like inpatient medicine? And I liked hospital-based medicine. And then I liked kind of the lure of the ER, that everything is different. Everything, you know, things are always changing. Something new is always coming in. There's always things to learn. You know, sometimes it's really busy and fast-paced. Sometimes it's a little bit slower and you can take more time. I think I just liked how different it was every day and kind of the pace of the work.
You got involved in admissions for residency, for emergency medicine, for your residency mm-hmm. program. What do you think, what did you learn as part of the admissions team for your residency program that you think pre-meds should know about at this stage in their life?
So I think something I realized was, so, you know, I did interviews, and I remember being a pre-med and going to my med school interviews and being a resident or being a med student and doing residency interviews. And I was always like super nervous. I would get real quiet. I'd get like real introverted, and I feel like I would just be in my head like too much during the interview. And one thing I learned when I'm interviewing these people is, you know, there are certain characteristics we're always looking for, which are probably pretty common, right? You're looking for people with good communication skills. You're looking for people with good work ethic. You're looking for people who are intellectually curious and want to learn. Kind of the, you know, the same thing that makes a good doctor, probably my guess is across most fields of medicine, and what makes a good medical student. I think one thing is to, like, when you're in those interview settings, like, you just need to relax. You know what I mean? This person isn't, like, you know, micro-analyzing every single word you say. They're just trying to figure out if you're sort of a normal person and and if you're someone that they feel like can sit and talk to patients and things like that. Because they already know so much data about you, right? Like, they know if you're applying to med school, they know your MCAT scores, they know your undergrad, they know your GPA, they know your science GPA, they know, you know, all of your extracurriculars. They sort of know already, like, are you a hard worker, or, you know, are you intelligent, things like that. I think in the interview, you're just sort of looking to make sure that this person is, you know, nice and normal and can communicate, and less about you trying to, like, sell yourself on the interview, if that makes sense, and more about you just kind of making a connection with that person.
Yeah, the coffee shop conversation that I like to call it. Just have a conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly think probably one of my best residency interviews, like, instead of talking about anything related to medicine. So I lived in Ohio during med school, and my parents had a farm, and I was like always growing vegetables on their farm to excess. Like, I would always be bringing tomatoes to the hospital to share with everyone because we didn't know what to do with them. And I think one of my best residency interviews, we like literally sat down and we talked about gardening and like our, you know, mutual pain in trying to grow strawberries. It was like totally unrelated to medicine at all. But it was probably one of the best, you know what I mean, conversations I had.
Yeah. I think so. when I talk to students, I try to let them know, as you were saying, how well can you communicate? That person interviewing you, especially for medical school interviews, a person interviewing you is picturing you like, can I see this student sitting in front of me communicating with my mom in the hospital, with my dad in the hospital? Can I see them telling my mom that she has cancer, or telling my dad that whatever, right? And they're trying to put you in that situation. And if you're just trying to sit there going, I'm amazing, I do this, I do that, I'm awesome, it's kind of hard to do that.
Yeah, it's just off-putting.
It's very off-putting. When we met, we hung out a little bit at the med school campus for a little bit, and we were talking about personal statements. And there was one very specific thing that you said when you were like, I hate when students put this in a personal statement. Do you remember what that conversation was?
I think the thing I dislike the most in personal statements is when people talk about like they try and tell you what it is to be a doctor or what is that what I said?
Yeah, that is exactly it. Why is that? Because I tell students that all the time. I'm like, you're telling who likely is going to be a physician, who's reading your personal statement, what it's like to be a doctor. Why do you think that's so off-putting for most people that are going to read the personal statement?
So, you know, I read a lot of actually our scribe personal statements, and I, you know, I do the like wilderness pre-med course. And so, like when I go to Costa Rica with the students for those 2 weeks, I actually sit down with each one of them in the evening and review, like read their personal statement and then make them rewrite it. Like on a one-on-one session. And I think the thing is that, so for someone who's like never gone through the training and never experienced what it feels like to be a physician, like to have them sort of talk about, it's like the generic statements, like doctors are nice and doctors are kind and doctors are altruistic. And on some level, you're sort of like, you have no idea what you're talking about. And for our students, I say like, you really know what it feels like to be a doctor when all of your pages are going off. One of your patients is really sick. You're not quite sure what to do next. Mm-hmm. And you're like trying to manage all those things. And you're internally feeling like, am I good enough? Am I capable? Like, am I competent? Like, and you know, and am I going to make a mistake that has the ability to harm someone else? That is like when you really feel like a doctor, I feel like, as an intern, not when you get your white coat or you're gifted mm-hmm. with your first pager, or, you know, you like hang your diploma or get your first student loan bill. Like that's when you're really wondering, like when you really realize that the choices you make have the ability to, you know, influence the rest of someone's life. And if you make the wrong choice, you know, you can have a profound negative impact on another human being.
Yeah.
And I think that's when it really sinks in, like, what have I done?
Yeah. And you're doing all that while you're hungry, working on your 20th hour for your shift, and your significant other and kid are at home wondering why you aren't home yet.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
It's very hard. And so while
you've just gone to Walmart and bought socks because you haven't washed any in 2 months and you finally run out of clean ones.
Or you just wear the patient socks. Those things with the little grippies on the bottom.
Yeah, everyone can tell though if you're wearing the patient socks because they come in funny colors.
Yeah. And that's it. Like, students can get some sort of appreciation from shadowing, from scribing, from doing all of that. But until all the pressure is on you, you have no idea.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about wilderness medicine. You've been working as an emergency medicine physician at University of Colorado. Where did this wilderness medicine kind of interest come from?
So I've always liked the outdoors. And then I think, you know, there's a big wilderness medicine group at the University of Colorado that's doing a lot of really interesting stuff, like teaching continuing medical education with the ski patrol, things like that. And so I was drawn to it based on kind of loving the outdoors, loving to ski, loving to be in the backcountry and into the woods. And then there was a PhD who's been on the podcast before, Dr. Miner, and he is a PhD educator primarily in wilderness medicine. And he was starting a course for undergraduates, which we run the course through CU Boulder now, and the students get elective credit. But he was starting this course for undergraduates the idea and the basis was to get, you know, so you spend all this time, like in your pre-med years, like, I don't know, learning biochemistry and molecular genetics and all these things that are so profoundly unapplicable to like treating the person with a broken bone in front of you, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was twofold. The first was to get clinical knowledge and experience into students younger. So if they're, you know, in a backcountry ski accident, they know how to splint an extremity and how to clear a C-spine and how to, you know, manage a patient until they're able to get them to definitive care, or they know how to clean and dress a wound in a field setting. So getting clinical knowledge to students much younger and getting them true medical experience much younger first. And the second was, you know, you're doing like awesome work, and I wish this podcast had existed when, you know, 15 years ago when I was in these students' shoes, but a lot of students don't have a great access to like mentorship, to, you know, advisors, to figuring out how to navigate this process and if this is what they want to do. So we developed this class that kind of combines those two things, and it's 2 weeks, and they spend the first week on campus, and they like shadow in the emergency department. They ride along on the ambulances for the EMS calls. They meet, like, you know, you come and talk. They meet career counselors. They meet admissions counselors. They do sort of an overview of sort of basic what we call wilderness medicine, but sort of how to think about patients and how to work up patients. They do a bunch of procedure labs like ultrasound, suturing, wound care, cardiac dissection, things like that. And then in the second week, they go up into the mountains and they put all these skills together and learn how to, you know, like take care of a patient in a field setting, how to work in a team to do search and rescue, how to do patient evacuations. And so since I felt like when I was, you know, in these students' shoes, I had like no direction and no idea of what I wanted to do and no idea how to navigate it, I think it really appealed to me to create that framework for them, and allow them to sort of explore this career in a setting where they get elective credit for it, right? Like I took art history and, like, you know, intro to drawing and all these like elective courses that in no way helped me at all at this point in my life, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. Now I can tell you about light in Renaissance paintings, but honestly, that's sort of a useless skill. And so I wanted to create like an elective curriculum for them that could actually help them. So
you mentioned elective credit. Is that something where a student who may be interested in doing this has to go to their school and make sure that it transfers over? Or is this something that anybody can go do and it just is another kind of school that shows up on a transcript somewhere?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we've had students from all over the country take the course. I mean, from every state, except I think Alaska. We've never had a student from Alaska. But we've had students from all over the country come and take the class. We offer scholarships for it. If they want elective credit for it, which a lot of them do, because, you know, they're completing the coursework, then we either give them elective credit through CU Boulder, or I've sent the curriculum along with information to schools before, and they've gotten elective credit through their own schools. So we tend to work with each student, but we've had students from all over the country do it. So
very cool. And is it just offered? You mentioned Costa Rica, so it's not just offered in Denver.
So it's offered. We do a version twice in the summer and once in the winter in Colorado. And you know, in the winter, we focus more on, like, they build snow caves and they're given the opportunity to actually sleep in their snow cave. They go snowshoeing. All of them end up wanting to sleep in the snow cave. It's actually pretty cool. In the summer, they go backpacking. And then we take a version of the course and we take it to Costa Rica. And we stay in an eco lodge, like in a nature preserve on the beach, which is super fun. So, and we usually take them, like, we go whitewater rafting, we go zip lining, we go hiking through the jungle, stuff like that. It's pretty remote. We're about 3 miles from, like, the nearest town, and it's this little surf town. And usually in one evening, we all, like, jog into town and get dinner. So it's a lot of fun.
And is this just for students who are interested in becoming physicians, or is this for pre-PAs, pre-nursing, is this kind of pre-health everybody?
Yeah, so we've done, So we've taken students from all of those disciplines. I even had a student who wanted to get a PhD in toxicology when it was said and done, but wanted to learn like wilderness medicine skills. So I think it draws both pre-health students of all different varieties and people who like the outdoors and want to like gain some skills to be safe in the wilderness. And it does the whole gamut, and we sort of work with each student to make sure they're getting what they want out of the class met. It's a ton of fun, and I have a ton of fun with the students, you know, kind of seeing what their interests are and what they want to do. So
you mentioned some of the advising aspect of it, where you're working on personal statements. So that would tell me that these students are a little bit older, getting ready to apply to medical school. At what age, what year in college should students be looking at doing this?
So I think it really depends, honestly, because I think each student comes in with a different goal. So if we've had everyone from, you know, first years, I don't know what the first year of undergrad is called now, freshmen.
Yeah.
So we've had everyone from first years through seniors, through people who've graduated and are debating going back towards to people who are actually like in different careers and thinking about going back to medicine. Hmm. I think it depends on when do you want to sit down and learn these skills and like get some actual clinical care knowledge and the ability to, you know, take care of other people in an emergency. And when do you really want to explore this, right? So if you're a freshman, you're like 100%, I know I want to go to med school. Maybe the time to do this class is like second or third year, and kind of get the career counseling and mentorship before you go into applying. If you don't have any idea if you want to do this, or you're like a senior and you're like, what do I want to do next? Then maybe that's the right time to take the class. Like for me, the right time to have taken this class would have been after I graduated, after I quit cocktail waitressing, while I was working as a lab tech. That would have been like when it would have been the right exposure for me. So I think it's very individual dependent.
You mentioned a scholarship for somebody who may be interested in doing this but can't afford the tuition. How easy is it to get the scholarship? What's involved with that?
So they're need-based scholarships, it's like I don't do the individual selection. It's essentially like a criteria, like you get X points for this and X points for that, to try and make it more fair. And so we just have them apply, and we have an administrator that, you know, ranks each of their application. It doesn't take long to apply. It's like one page. So,
okay. For somebody who may be interested in this now, where should they go to find out more information?
So I'd send them to the website. It's www.coloradowm.org.
Okay.
Very it's essentially easy. The shortened Colorado Wilderness Medicine.
Yeah. And when's the next class, as we're recording this here in the end of March of 2018? When's the next class?
So May, June. And then we're going to Costa Rica this summer. And then there's a class in August.
Awesome. So lots of opportunities to get involved. So, Elaine, as we wrap up here, you've run the gamut from a non-traditional student to a cocktail waitress. I think you're our first cocktail, probably our only cocktail waitress we'll ever have on the podcast, to now being an emergency medicine physician, doing your wilderness medicine stuff and working as an emergency medicine doc. What's been the biggest takeaway through this whole process for you that you think you can teach the pre-med student listening to this right now?
I think especially when I was in their shoes, I felt like I really had to pursue the things that would like look good on my application. Like I had to check this box and check this box. And I remember when I was a med student, I told someone I was like wanted to do emergency medicine, and then I was like thinking about a wilderness medicine fellowship, and they were like, "That's ridiculous. That's like nuts." And so for me, I think, you know, pursuing your passion, like if what you love is wilderness medicine and you want clinical exposure, then, you know, come take our class and then volunteer with Ski Patrol. The course gives you your CPR certification and your wilderness first responder certification. So You know, like, and you can get clinical exposure in a pre-hospital setting, you know, through ski patrol. Like, I think the big takeaway is pursue your passions and pursue them aggressively rather than sort of trying to check each box, because you're never going to be happy just, you know, checking each box. Like, I did X amount of bench research and X amount of this. There's ways to do research through wilderness medicine if that's your passion, or through global health if that's your passion. So I think it's really important to pursue the things that really, I guess, spark joy in you.
All right, there you have it. Again, that was Dr. Elaine Reno. She's actually on Specialty Stories this week as well, talking about academic emergency medicine. So you should go check out Specialty Stories if you haven't already listened to that one as well. If you're interested in the Wilderness Medicine Program, go to coloradowm.org. Again, coloradowm.org to find out some more information about the Wilderness Medicine Program. Are you affiliated with a school or know of a school that has a cool program like University of Colorado's Wilderness Medicine Program? Let me know. Shoot me an email, ryan@medicalschoolhq.net, and I'll try to get a person on that knows about that program to talk about that program. My job here is to try to spread as much information as possible. So if there are amazing opportunities for research, amazing opportunities for going out in the woods, like the Wilderness Medicine Program, let me know. Shoot me an email, ryan@medicalschoolhq.net. Hope you have a great week. Don't forget, if you want to work with me for personal statements, extracurricular editing, even if it's not this cycle, you're listening to this, it's end of March of 2018, use the coupon code MARCH2018, that's MAR2018, MAR2018, all capital letters, to save 15% by the end of 3/31/2018. Hope you have a great week. See you next time here on the Pre-Med Years.